Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Sharice Stevens, bringing you today's Yuma Sun Daily, with a look at life in and around Yuma. Let's start with local news. Our first story is titled, Coalition to End Homelessness Prepares for Annual Count, by Michael Neary, Sun staff writer. As the annual point-in-time count measuring homelessness approaches, Lucia Wilson is reminding residents that people experiencing homelessness harbor a range of stories not always visible to people gazing from the outside. Homelessness has a lot of different shades, said Wilson, the leading housing specialist at Achieve Human Services in Yuma. For the person who doesn't really recognize homelessness, one of the first two thought processes that comes to mind is either that they have severe mental disorders or they are substance abusers. The reality of it is that people are homeless on the street for a lot more reasons than mental health disorders and substance use orders, she added. Many people, she said, are homeless because they don't receive enough income, a problem that's heightened, she said, by rising housing costs. Wilson, who chairs the Yuma Coalition to End Homelessness, is partnering with Lieutenant Amber Herzog, corps officer at the Salvation Army Yuma, to coordinate this year's annual point-in-time count. Herzog serves as the chair of the coalition's ad hoc point-in-time committee. How the count will work. The count is a one-day national snapshot of people experiencing homelessness, led by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. This year, we are looking at the night of January 27, Wilson said. We'll be conducting the count from the 28th through the 30th and asking people where they spend the night of the 27th. Wilson said volunteers ask people who appear to be without a place to stay if they'd like to participate in a survey to record, among many things, some of the factors that led to their homelessness. She said volunteers, after receiving training on the morning, might approach someone walking around with a shopping cart full of belongings and ask them if they are experiencing unsheltered homelessness and if they'd be willing to participate in the point-in-time count. The number of people counted, along with their responses, influences funding for resources that can help treat the problem of homelessness. Nutritious snacks needed. Wilson said volunteers offer participants backpacks containing items such as hygiene supplies, snacks, and socks and other materials helpful to someone experiencing homelessness. Both Herzog and Wilson welcome donations in the coming week. The biggest need that we have for the count is for snacks and the feminine hygiene products, Herzog said, emphasizing that snacks need to be individually wrapped. People seeking to make donations, Herzog said, can bring them to the Salvation Army Yuma at 445 South 4th Avenue from Tuesday through Thursday, January 20 through January 22nd. The center is open from 9 a.m. to noon and from 1 to 3 p.m. on those days. Wilson cited cases of water, granola bars, tuna snacks, feminine hygiene products, and other products as among the items that are needed. People seeking to donate items can simply bring them to the Salvation Army Yuma, as Herzog explained. They can also use the coalition's sign-up genius at tinyurl.com/3MWV2SX9. As for volunteering to help with the count, Herzog encouraged people to email in advance, specifying the day they would like to help. She and Wilson suggested that they send an email to ycehnine28@gmail.com. She and Wilson also stressed that volunteers go out in pairs or groups of three on each of the three counting days, Wednesday through Friday, January 28th through January 30. We don't allow anyone to count by themselves, Wilson said. They have to have a buddy. If they want to do the count and they don't have someone to come with them, we will pair them up with someone who doesn't have a buddy with them. Herzog, who leads the training for the volunteers, said it's not always possible to find someone to pair up with a lone volunteer, and so emailing in advance, she said, is helpful. The significance of the count. Wilson said information from Yuma County goes to the Arizona Department of Housing, and then, ultimately, to the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, and through An accurate count, Wilson stressed, has significant consequences. The compiled numbers, she said, guide the amounts of funds that get sent to certain areas and certain communities for different resources. Herzog said local agencies can also draw on the data to apply for resources. I can use this data to apply for different programs, as can any nonprofit or agency. We can use the data and say, here are the numbers that support what I'm telling you we need in our community. Last year's point in time count of unsheltered people in Yuma County totaled 118. Additional statistics and information are available at yumahomeless.com/PIT. People with questions about the count can call Elvis Cost, coordinator of the Yuma Coalition to End Homelessness, at 928-581-2231. They can also email yceh928@gmail.com for more information. Our next story is titled, Lane Closures Extended Due to Cesar Chavez Boulevard Expansion Prep Work, staff reports. San Luis will extend lane closures on Cesar Chavez Boulevard and 10th Avenue as utility relocation work continues, being carried out by the company Lumen. In a statement, city officials reported that the work originally scheduled for January 9 through 12 will be extended to additional dates on January 21, 27, and 28 from 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. During this time, the northbound left turn lane on 10th Avenue will remain closed, as well as the eastbound through lane and right turn lane on Cesar Chavez Boulevard. These closures may cause traffic delays in the area. The city warned that dates and times are subject to change without prior notice. Motorists are advised to plan their trips in advance, consider alternate routes, and obey traffic signage and speed limits, especially in work zones and residential streets used as detours. Drivers are also urged to reduce speed and remain alert for pedestrians and workers in order to prevent accidents. The city of San Luis apologized for any inconvenience caused by the work and thanked the community for its patience and cooperation. For more information, residents may contact the Public Works Department at 928-341-8577 or check road updates on the official website at www.sanluisaz.gov. Continuing local news, Freedom Library to host courses on Constitution Economics by Matilda Carpenter, Sun staff writer. Yuma residents have an opportunity to study the U.S. Constitution and basic economics through a series of classes offered by the Freedom Library. The 12-week courses begin January 20 for economics and January 22 for the Constitution. Classes are held each semester from 6 to 8 p.m., according to Freedom Library founder Howard Blitz. Blitz said the courses are designed to improve civic understanding and provide context for current events. It's important for our survival as a free nation, Blitz said. If you don't understand the United States Constitution, you won't understand what's happening in the world today. Each course costs $50, which covers books and materials. Students who successfully complete a class are eligible to apply for scholarships totaling $1,000. Blitz said two scholarships are available for each course. One is a monetary scholarship sent directly to an educational institution of the student's choice. The other is a travel scholarship that allows recipients to attend a week-long seminar hosted by organizations across the country. You get to interact with people from all over the world and learn more about ideas of liberty, freedom, and free markets, Blitz said. Local resident Connie Whitener Cable has taken the Constitution course multiple times. She said the class has helped her better understand how government and property rights are connected. I realized how important these ideas were to the founders and what they were willing to sacrifice, she said. Whitener Cable said the courses cover materials she never encountered in school. It's complicated how the legislature and Congress are supposed to work, she said. This helps explain it. Blitz said education is essential for maintaining a free society. An uneducated free society has never existed, he said. In order to be free, society needs to be educated. Contact the Freedom Library at 928-246-2327 or info@thefreedomlibrary.org for more information. Go to www.thefreedomlibrary.org. Next in local news, Welton Tractor Rodeo Brings History to Life by Matilda Carpenter, Sun Staff Writer. The 17th annual Welton Tractor Rodeo brought together vintage tractor aficionados from across the country last Friday. The event, which celebrates 20th century agriculture, showcased the machinery that made life possible for farmers in the early 1900s. Bill Lanier Jr. led tours and talked about the importance of keeping such a vital piece of American history alive. The whole thing is about showcasing agricultural equipment and practices from years gone by, Lanier said. This year, we're in Yuma and Welton. For thousands of years, it's been an agricultural area. Part of the goal of the rodeo is to connect this living history with the new generations of young folks entering into agricultural industry. Our primary goal for us as a club is to engage the younger people in the past agricultural practices, and we have antique tractors and antique gasoline engines that we're used to do all the farm work in this country before electricity became widely available. And so it's an educational experience for the spectators and the exhibitors alike, Lanier said. We get a lot of young people from Welton, the Antelope Union High School, and the FFA class, and the auto skills class in particular are instrumental in making this show happen. They volunteer tirelessly, and this is an agricultural community, and the students that are at these schools, they are ag students, and they enjoy the antique machinery. One of the most engaging displays was an enormous oil engine, beautifully restored, that was built in 1903 in Aberdeen, Scotland, and later it powered machines for the English during World War I. With giant half-ton flywheels and puffs of smoke floating from a towering chimney, the machine evoked a sense of industry and ingenuity of past engineers. But that was far from the only piece of working equipment. There was a plethora of smaller, more practical engines that would have been seen heavy use in American fields, including one with a familiar shade of green that any farmer would recognize today. That particular engine was over a century old, with original paint, and Lanier explained that farmers would have utilized what was then a newfangled technology to pump water, power workshops, split wood, or even generate electricity, which was scarce in rural America at the time. Another interesting part of the event was the tractor pull. Essentially, the tractor was hitched to a large weighted sled and tasked with towing it down a long dirt pathway. As the sled is pulled, its weight shifts and exerts more pressure until the tractor is finally stopped and the distance traveled is measured. The practice originated with 19th century farmers as they tested their horses' power and was quickly adopted to tractors when they hit the scene. In another fascinating glimpse into the past, one display showcased a fully functioning belt-driven workshop, which powered a grinding wheel, drill press, hacksaw, and water pump, all using antique engines. While the display was condensed onto a trailer for travel, it was easy to imagine a turn-of-the-century workshop as it would have existed in the time. Of course, these machines were built long before the idea of a litigious society had ever begun to enter into the public zeitgeist, with spinning flywheels ready to snack on wandering fingers. Luckily, William Lee, the event's safety officer, was there to make sure everyone went home with their digits intact. Lee was decked out in period-accurate sheriff's attire for the event, which certainly added a certain bit of flair to the festivities. Even though it looks like I'm dressed up, I'm actually dressed down. Really, these are 1860s work clothes. If I were dressed up, I'd be in tails, ascot, top hat, spats, slacks, but I'm not. I'm in work clothes. These are work jeans and a work shirt. But more than curious contraptions or thrilling tractor demonstrations, what was most evident at the rodeo was the sense of community. Attendees hailed from as far as Alaska and Canada, with one exhibitor explaining they had driven their trailer of tractors over 2,000 miles one way just to attend the event. A lot of folks come here from Canada and the Midwest for the winter, and they walk around and say, "I remember my grandfather used that. I remember when I had to plow a field with that tractor. Or I had to fire up one of those antique gas engines to pump water for my livestock." So you get a lot of enjoyment from that spectrum. And from the kids who have virtually no idea that this is how it was done back in the old days. You were listening to the Yuma Sun Daily with Sharice Stevens of Sun Sounds of Arizona. In state news, our story is Arizona lawmakers propose utility tax cut to offset $2.3 billion in past surcharges by Howard Fisher, Capital Media Services. Saying electric customers pay too much for years, two Republicans lawmakers have a plan to pay it back, sort of over the next 20 years. But the $2.3 billion that Representatives David Marshall of Snowflake and Ralph Heap of Mesa say is the overcharge figure would not come from the utilities that collected the money. Instead, it would come out of the money the state would otherwise collect in sales tax on customer bills. And that would cut state revenue by more than $687 million. Heap defended the plan. "We want to do things to help the ratepayers," he told the Capital Media Services. "I think that's one of the chief responsibilities of the corporation commissioners," Heap said, saying ratepayers have had little defense over the past couple of years. But there's a political component to all of this. Marshall and Heap are running this year to be the GOP nominees for the two seats up for grabs in the five-member Arizona Corporation Commission, which is responsible for setting utility rates. Recruited by Senator Jake Hoffman, the chair of the Arizona Freedom Caucus, they are trying to oust incumbents Kevin Thompson and Nick Myers, both of whom are Republicans. Central to the claim of overcharge are rules that were adopted two decades ago. They set targets for utilities to get 15% of their power from renewable sources by 2025. They also were separate requirements for utilities to meet energy efficiency standards. More recently, the current commissioners, including Thompson and Myers, voted to scrap the standards, noting that most utilities had already met them. By that time, commissioners said that the surcharges that utilities were allowed to collect to meet the renewable energy standards had reached $2.3 billion. And that is the money that HB 2269 proposed by Marshall and Heap seeks to recover for consumers. The method they have chosen is to eliminate the state sales tax paid by customers, add it automatically to their utility bills until, as they say, the $2.3 billion has been paid back to Arizona residents, or the end of 2046, whichever occurs first. But it's not a refund, and not just because the $2.3 billion would not come from the utilities who actually collected it. Many of the customers who paid the extra cash for utilities that were allowed to be collected are no longer here. Instead, the beneficiaries would be current and future customers. While we're unsure of any legal way to get ratepayers' money back, there are things we can do to help reduce costs today, Marshall said in a prepared statement. "In my opinion, the next best thing we can do is provide justice by eliminating taxes on electric and gas going forward." But here, too, there's a political element. Heap blames Chris Mays, currently the Democratic Attorney General and up for re-election this year, for the extra charges. Mays, then a Republican, served on the commission and helped create the renewable energy and energy efficiency standards. Chris Mays catered to outside special interests and adopted expensive renewable energy surcharges that cost ratepayers more than $2.3 billion over the last 20 years, Heap said. What that created, he said, was a special interest slush fund, which also led to foreign-owned boondoggles like the Solana Generating Station. The plant, built by a Spanish company and opened in 2014, was designed to use sunlight to heat molten salt to provide electricity for several hours after sunset. While still online and providing power to Arizona Public Service, it was beset with problems, including not producing the power that was promised, as well as various air quality violations. Eliminating the sales tax could prove politically difficult. In the most recent fiscal year, utilities generated more than $687 million, according to the Arizona Department of Revenue. That point did not go unnoticed by Mays. In a statement of her own, the Attorney General pointed out she is interceding in current rate hike requests by both Arizona Public Service and Tucson Electric Power, which she said, quote, would squeeze hundreds more out of Arizona families, end quote. Representatives Marshall and Heap are pushing a bill that would blow a hole in the state budget, Mays said. That's not relief. It's a scam. And Mays defended the renewable energy standards, pointing out it was an all-Republican commission that approved them. She called them, quote, common-sense energy policies that cut pollution and created tens of thousands of high-paying jobs, end quote. It may be that $687 million price tag, however, that is the biggest barrier to the proposal. Republican lawmakers already are advancing their own tax cut plan, one modeled after the Big Beautiful Bill approved last year by Congress. It has an annual price tag in the $440 million range. But Marshall said that eliminating the sales tax on utilities, regardless of what happened in the past, is good public policy. Taxing electric and gas utilities creates a perverse incentive for the government to support increased rate hikes, he said. If rates go up, the state gets more money, Marshall said in his statement. That leads some to view rate increases as a source of potential funds for the liberal pet projects. But Marshall did not immediately respond to questions about that claim, particularly as rate increases are approved by the commission without legislative input. The legislation is set up so that when the sales tax exemption ends, either when the $2.3 billion has been reached or the 2046, the levy would return automatically. At that point, Marshall said it would be up to the then current lawmakers to decide whether to keep the exemption. Now for recent Yuma obituaries. Angelica Romero Cordova, 38, Yuma. Jose Plancarte Covarrubias, 73, Yuma. David L. Kramer, 75, Yuma. Brittany Nicole Dodd, 36, Yuma. Jose Fernando Partida Fernandez, 57, Baja California. Agustin Ceballos Lopez, 90, San Luis. Espiridion Lugo, 72, Yuma. Ignacio Lozano Moreno, 79, Somerton. Candace L. Peterson, 74, Yuma. Michelle I. Stewart, 54, Dewey. Sun Sounds extends condolences to the families and loved ones. The weather forecast for this week, starting with today, Monday, January 19th, will have a low of 46 degrees, a high of 77, and an average humidity of 29% with 7 to 11 mile per hour winds. Tuesday will see a low of 48, a high of 76, and an average humidity of 29% and 5 to 10 mile per hour winds. Wednesday will have a low of 46, a high of 74, 28% average humidity, and 4 to 8 mile per hour winds. Thursday will see a low of 47, a high of 74, 27% average humidity, and 2 to 6 mile per hour winds. Friday will finally see a low of 43, a high of 74, 31% average humidity, and 5 to 9 mile per hour winds. All of this week, the UV index is between 3 and 4, which is rated as moderate by the World Health Organization, who also recommends daily sun protection from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. We are at the conclusion of today's Yuma Sun Daily program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Sharice Stevens. Thank you for tuning in today. If you missed any part of this program, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and listen to it on demand under Broadcast Info and Audio. The Wall Street Journal is next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.